Neuro Pathways, a Cleveland Clinic podcast exploring the latest research discoveries and clinical advances in the fields of neurology, neurosurgery, neurorehab, and psychiatry.
Cancer and its treatments can result in an array of adverse side effects, including pain, mobility issues, and cognitive impairments. In this episode of Neural Pathways, we're discussing oncology rehabilitation, how it can be integrated effectively into a patient's care plan to manage these side effects and support quality of life. I'm your host, Glenn Stevens, neurologist, neuro-oncologist in Cleveland Clinic's Neurological Institute. And joining me for today's conversation is Dr. Eileen Slavin. Dr. Slavin is an oncologic rehabilitation physician in the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation within Cleveland Clinic's Neurological Institute. Eileen, welcome to Neural Pathways.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me today.
So, Eileen, I know you're fairly new to the Cleveland Clinic, so tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, where you did your training, how you made your way to the clinic, and what your interests are.
Yes, I'm actually a Cleveland native, so it's really nice to be home working for this institution. I did my medical school at Ohio University Heritage College of Osteopathic Medicine, so I'm a DO. And I did some of my medical school rotations also within the Cleveland Clinic system. So it's a homecoming in more ways than one. My residency training was at a community hospital in South Florida called Larkin Community Hospital. That was for physical medicine rehabilitation. And then I did my year of fellowship training at Georgetown for cancer rehabilitation.
So how many cancer rehabilitation programs are there in the country?
That's a good question. I believe now we are at 11. One recently closed, another recently opened. So I believe 11.
And did anybody else train with you, or there's one per year, or they take a couple per year?
It's one per year.
Okay.
Yes.
And for your work at the Cleveland Clinic, what percentage of your time is spent in oncologic rehab versus doing general rehab?
So for starters, I have 2 half days a week, and so that's until my clinic gets busy enough that I can do probably 2 to 3 full days is what we're aiming for right now. The other days of the week, I'm at Mellon Center, so treating patients who have spasticity, and also on the consult service too, so helping patients planning, you know, their disposition, and also I've had a few oncology consults from several of the teams while on that service as
so
well.
So I take it that you live your oncologic stuff, you live in Taussig.
Yes.
Is that right? In the
yes.
Cancer Center?
Mm-hmm.
So before we get too much into this, does somebody want to refer a patient to you? How would they do that?
Yes. So there's an order in the system for consult, physical medicine, and rehabilitation. Then when the order opens, that dialog box pops open. They actually, in Epic, created a button for me. So you would click oncology rehabilitation, and then reason for referral can be helpful, just a few words, you know, spasticity, range of motion, mobility problem, neurogenic bladder bowel, you know, or maybe a specific question that you want me to answer. And then you hit submit. And if patients have Epic, the ticket goes to their Epic, or they get a phone call from scheduling.
And how long would it take someone to get in to see you?
I would say within probably a week, sometimes even same day. Some days have been busier than others as I build. So hoping to get busier as time moves on.
You know, prior to you coming, if we had someone that had a specific problem, we would occasionally send people over to physiatry, mm-hmm. mostly if they had a lot of spasticity and they needed Botox or this or that type of stuff. We'd have some people do driving evaluations, but that's mostly through OT as opposed to rehab itself. Or we would refer the patients to palliative care. So how are you different than the things that the palliative care would look after? Or is there overlap in what you're doing together? Are you working specifically with the pal care folks?
Yes.
Tell me that.
Palliative care and oncology rehabilitation at some institutions are seen as being almost on a continuum. So at places where both services are available, we work in tandem. At other places where oncology rehab wouldn't be available, of course, like you say, the patients would go to palliative. So the way that I've conceptualized, you know, my role here is that palliative care is awesome, by the way. And they help us with goals of care discussions. They are very helpful when patients have a very heavy burden, for example, of metastatic disease, or in a myeloma patient, many lytic lesions. So someone that sort of has head to toe, very severe pain that wouldn't necessarily be helped just by one intervention. Maybe this person needs regular follow-up, needs to be on opioid therapy to control the very high pain levels that they have. My role is evaluating patients from the neuromusculoskeletal perspective and treating that focal pain, looking at mobility impairments, looking at how we can use prostheses and orthoses to help patients. How can we collaborate with other teams? How we can work on lymphedema or prehabilitation for patients who might undergo transplant or surgery.
Yeah, I think that one real growth area that you will have as people become accustomed to having you around and start working with you is this concept of this prehabilitation, which is something I've never really thought about a whole lot. And as a brain tumor person, you know, that doesn't really come into our area that much. But I'm sure some of the cancer patients, it is more. So tell me what your role would be there. I guess you would identify someone's having a problem. They're going to have some surgery or something done. You do ounce of prevention. I guess you look at that. So tell me a little bit about that concept.
Yes. So the concept of prehabilitation is for patients prepared for transplant, a big surgery, particularly when we know that the outcomes, you know, could be potentially devastating, that a patient could end up with lymphedema, could have major mobility issues, could lose a lot of weight, might have a lower functional status. We try to identify patients who perhaps have 4 to 6 weeks until they're having their surgery or their transplant. That is better, of course, for solid tumor for patients undergoing neoadjuvant chemo because we can buy some time. And it's essentially optimizing them from, you know, three different perspectives. So it's looking at psychological health, so referring them to psychology, making sure they have good psychosocial support, no transportation issues if we can help with that, helping with the physical activity, physical functioning piece. So talking about exercise counseling, safety recommendations, things to watch out for, giving them actual exercise prescriptions using the FIT principle. And then that third piece is sort of the nutrition piece. So collaborating with our dietitian colleagues, making sure, okay, we know this patient will lose weight. We know this patient will lose muscle mass. Sarcopenia is kind of a hot topic buzzword right now, but it's very relevant in terms of making sure, okay, how can we get this patient to consume enough protein, maintain caloric intake, maintain muscle mass, because all of these things will be affected. And the idea is if you build someone up before you, you know, quote unquote, beat them up with all these treatments to try to treat their cancer, or even in a palliative sense to treat their cancer, that you're bringing their baseline down, not to a level that it would be had you just done nothing and said, okay, go through this.
Yeah, I expect this will be quite a growth area for you as people are familiar with having you around.
Yes, I'm really excited. I've already had some discussions, made some headway to work on projects for prehab. A few of our teams here have actually started projects too that they've involved me in. One of my goals, many lofty goals, is to have prehab for any cancer patient as appropriate throughout the system.
Yeah, you know, there was some interesting data came out of Duke quite a few years ago. I think it was by one of the physical therapists there, but they looked at their grade 3 and grade 4 glioblastoma patients.
Okay.
And they compared populations, but patients that were able to exercise 30 minutes a day at a brisk walk pace 5 days per week on average lived twice as long as those that did not. And again, it's always hard to know the chicken and the egg, but one would think that there's something there, right? That we should be doing a better job on all of our patients having this as a standard. This is what you should be doing. I even thought at one point, should we be buying everybody a step counter and telling them, boy, we'd like to see you do 5,000 steps a day or 10,000, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, so that's also something that I'm working on too, is how to operationalize that in a way that makes sense, that's easy to understand. Of course, we have patients, you know, with health literacy concerns, psychosocial concerns, transportation issues, right? So all of these extra layers can make prehab a little bit complicated. Depending on what cancer type you're looking at and the size of the study, there's always this debate of, is supervised physical activity superior to unsupervised physical activity? I think some of that boils down to patient preference. I mean, we have some data that supervised is better, of course, at some, you know, in some institutions and some disease groups, that can be really hard to make happen. Depending, you know, on your patient and their particular factors. And of course, we're moving towards personalized cancer medicine, just like the rest of medicine too. So we have to be cognizant of that fact as well.
So what are you seeing mostly your first couple of months? What types of things are you looking after mostly?
Yes. So I've seen quite a few patients for prehabilitation concerns or physical deconditioning, asking for exercise advice. I've seen a handful of patients who have chronic graft versus host disease after allogeneic bone marrow transplant, which is also a very exciting area. It's something that has been really hard to treat, of course. So I'm really interested in, you know, doing research, particularly with the allo stem cell group. I've also had a few patients who have experienced radiation fibrosis syndrome for head and neck cancer. So I've seen trismus, some range of motion issues that present sort of like cervical dystonia. And I have planned some botulinum toxin injections for those patients. And I would say the other big group that's been really supportive of me is the breast cancer team. So screening patients for lymphedema who are at risk, thinking about shoulder pain, range of motion abnormalities, aromatase inhibitor-induced arthralgias for our ERPR-positive patients, and the like.
So if you're going to do injections, or will you do that at the Mellon Center, or will you be able to do injections, or someone needs a joint injection, or...
Yes. Great question. So right now my Pyxis is stocked for botulinum toxin at Tossig, also for lidocaine, some of the steroids that I use, to be able to do joint injections, tendon sheath injections, also for spasticity.
And we don't want to take away the stuff from the headache folks, but
sure.
Will you do occipital nerve blocks and those types of things as well?
Actually, yes. I have a patient who had a cancer diagnosis, sarcoma, actually, and I have an injection plan for that particular patient.
So peripheral neuropathy.
Yes.
What options do we have for these patients?
Yes. So typically, when I evaluate these patients, I want to know if the symptoms are more positive versus negative, just because I like to have a frank discussion with patients about, hey, you know, you have numbness. We don't have a really good way right now to treat numbness. But in terms of the positive symptoms, so the kind of annoying tingling sensations, burning, shooting pain, lancinating pain, however someone might describe it, we can use medications. We prescribe exercise. That's the number one advice per the literature right now in terms of evidence-based medicine. Palliative medicine, this is a plug for them, they're using a device too, the scrambler therapy. And admittedly, I don't want to steal their thunder and go into that because I want patient referrals my way too. But they have a really interesting device too that they're using. I believe it's neuromodulation.
Okay.
To help. So I don't think insurance covers it right now. I'd have to check with Dr. Patel about that, but that's another option for patients too.
And I think that I saw that you also will do some return to work. evaluation?
Yes.
So tell me, because this can sometimes be the bane of our existence, right? Can patients work? Can't they work?
Yes. So I don't do sort of disability specific okay. evals. So that would be more of an IME
okay.
Referral, but for a patient who is motivated to return to work, but might have some level of disability and might need an evaluation or need, you know, some sort of paperwork that says, hey, I'm great to go back to work, but, you know, I need, you know, some level of accommodation or some recognition that this is a problem for me. We can evaluate patients that way and also send them to PTOT as appropriate.
In neuro-oncology, we have a very active spine program. And we probably do maybe about 150 spine radiosurgery cases a year for patients that have mets to the spine. Mm-hmm. Now, some of them have had surgery, some of them have not. But as you can imagine, these patients would have a lot of the things that would be in your category that have bowel and bladder difficulties, spasticity, those
yes.
types of things. So, you know, certainly another area for us to think about how you could help engage our patients and get them involved in the care.
Yes, absolutely. I've been participating the last couple of weeks in the spine tumor board too.
Oh, excellent.
Which has been good just to listen to, you know, what kinds of cases, what kinds of questions, concerns are coming up with the team. And it's been really interesting.
So if somebody's out there thinking, should I send somebody to see you? What's your advice to them? I guess the way I always look at it is if they're not sure, they probably should send. What should they send patients to you for?
Yes. So patients who have neuromusculoskeletal pain, of course, related to the cancer or treatments, but also sometimes we see patients who might have knee pain, but perhaps their diagnosis was breast cancer. We're happy to see them. I'm happy to see patients from a prehabilitation perspective for exercise counseling, safety recommendations, anyone who has a mobility impairment, patients who are physically deconditioned. Obviously, that could be quite a few people, and that might need a little bit of parsing out. I've had a lot of really good messages and emails from many teams, from docs and APPs saying, hey, I have this patient. Do you think he or she would be a good fit for what you could do? And I'm always happy to evaluate. And some of the times, I mean, most of the time, right, I'm helpful, but there are some cases where I've maybe done 90% and that other 10% is a very specific referral to another team. But I sort of see myself as a really, you know, nice kind of connection between rehab and some of the other teams that we have and can certainly help facilitate referrals if it's not something that I can help with or maybe can help, like I said, 90% of the way. But hey, I just want the opinion of this expert to round out my findings and conclusion.
And talk to us a little bit about cognitive rehab. Do you offer that, or this is done by the occupational therapist with cognitive behavioral, or are you involved with that or no?
Sure. We do somewhat. So patients will come to me with, they used to call it chemo brain mm-hmm. or brain fog. We don't call it that as much anymore. It's more cancer associated fatigue, just because we know that there's, you know, many aspects to the sort of, you know, sense of cognitive impairment or you know, fog, as it were. Typically, those patients are referred to speech for evaluation, also neuropsychology. I will usually assess and, you know, with history and physical exam, sort of assess, okay, is there some other medical issue going on that this patient needs blood work, that this patient needs, you know, to go back to their oncologist? Do we need a neurologist to evaluate the patient and to have their opinion? But typically, that's my role. Also, we know that exercise is some of the best evidence that we have for cancer-associated fatigue. So I sort of jumpstart that discussion and provide exercise recommendations and kind of tease out what patients have been doing exercise-wise or not doing, and, you know, what's the barrier then to exercise, and kind of using that motivational interviewing that we learned about in medical school kind of in the best way possible.
Mm-hmm. And if you're going to do a joint injection, do you use ultrasound or not? And do you have ultrasound in Tosig that you can use, or that's something that's coming?
Yes, I actually have a portable ultrasound, but it's quite nice. You can do injections without ultrasound. My preference is always to use ultrasound, just because the way that I was trained and the way that my brain works is I don't like sticking needles into places that I can't absolutely see. So that's my preference, and that's what I do usually 99% of the time. Every once in a blue moon, a subacromial shoulder injection you can do blind safely, but I prefer it.
Are you doing EMGs or no?
No, I would love to, but no. And not every rehab doctor says that they like EMGs, but I love them. I find them quite fascinating.
So, you know, the big growth area in oncology in the last several years, and certainly in it's been a game changer in melanoma and a number of different types of disorders, the advent of immunotherapies. And, you know, for the good that the immunotherapies do, we also see a lot of itises, you know, a lot of inflammation, GI tract, eyes, lungs, a lot of things can get inflamed with it. So it would probably beg the concern that if you give these drugs to do good, they can also cause inflammation and cause bad, which would sound like maybe they need someone to manage the complications and side effects. So have you seen or been seeing patients with that have been on immunotherapies that have developed problems, or what types of problems do you anticipate seeing that you could help with?
Yes, I've seen a few patients, even on consults, who have had neurotoxicities from immunotherapy. So some pretty severe demyelinating neuropathies, for example, or some, you know, peripheral edema or unexplained sort of edema from these immunotherapies. And as I said before, when cancer treatments are becoming more personalized, I think our field will have to step up to the plate to be able to say, okay, well, what new treatments do we have from a rehab perspective to help these patients? And also, what data are we collecting? I participate in every other month in a group that's a cancer rehab tumor board, primarily for our fellows, but also our attendings come on too to listen and to help facilitate the conversation. So we've already talked about this. Oh, you know, have you tried botulinum toxin injections for a patient who had this particular immunotherapy? Yes. Okay. Well, I did it the second time for the patient after he had really good results the first time, but I noticed that after he received this immunotherapy, the injections weren't as effective. Is there some sort of underlying immune reason that the toxin isn't as effective? So I think the awareness is sort of building. And so along with that will come the research and the sort of all of us nationwide and internationally putting our heads together to see how we can tackle those challenges.
Well, I hope that when you go to the national meetings, the room starts filling up slowly a little more with people that are in your subspecialty area over time. It sounds like an important part of management of cancer patients as time goes on. So we're very happy to have you here at the Cleveland Clinic, and we hope to utilize your sources and those that are out there. I suspect there's a low likelihood they have had access to somebody that does what you do. So it sounds like you're ready, willing, and able to see patients. So we hope that you get so busy that we have to hire another one of you.
Yes, that's the plan. It's a real honor and privilege to be here, as all of us have been affected by cancer in some way, by patients that we treat or family members. So really excited about this work, and it's very important. And I really appreciate the collaboration from all of our oncology teams and all of our therapy teams, neurology, P&O, nutrition, everyone who's been involved, nursing. It's been really great.
Thank you for joining us today, and look forward for the flood coming in.
Yes, thank you so much. Me too.
This concludes this episode of Neuro Pathways. You can find additional podcast episodes on our website, clevelandclinic.org/neuropodcast, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget, you can access real-time updates from experts in Cleveland Clinic's Neurological Institute on our Consult QD website. That's consultqd.clevelandclinic.org/neuro, or follow us on Twitter at CLE Clinic MD, all one word. And thank you for listening.